Within defeat may yet be grasped victory. However petty, one must struggle for the slimmest of gains if war is ultimately to be spun in one's favor. Such actions form a part of the bloody arithmetic of conflict. Petty tit for tats, to deny the foe, degrade the foe, usurp the foe. Bitter indeed are they, scant comfort do they provide for the commandery or the soldiery alike, for it is hard to imagine success spinning forth from loss. This is a tale of such a time. Perilous actions fought to deny arch-betrayer ambitions. Deaths spent in the name of an altogether longer cause. Know then that this is a record of the 7th Legion on the Red Planet. Of the requite stolen from the grasps of the Death of Innocence. A record of the Imperial Fist's expedition to Mars. It has been proffered, upon occasion, that the Schism of Mars should, in scholarly terms, be considered a purely internal affair of the Mechanicum. Yes, one of its cultural tenets within this disagreement was surrounding the nature of the Emperor as their religion's omnissiah, and the role that Terra played within the partnership between the Imperium and Mechanicum. Despite this, and indeed owing to that selfsame partnership, any affair that fundamentally threatened the disparate feudal web that formed the followers of the Machine God very much concerned Terra and its lords. When Kelbor Hal broke open the vaults of Moravec, unleashing the scrap code across the sands of the Red Planet, it was not merely Mars that felt its touch. An early casualty of the scrap code's malice was Mars's astropathic choir, choked in their chambers as the code unleashed toxic elements into its air filtration systems, plunging the Red Planet into silence as its mundane and etheric communications networks were annihilated. The anti-binary shucked the boundaries of the world, however, using whatever technological comms networks it had not sundered irreparably to spread to Mechanicum outposts throughout the solar system, corrupting those that the Fabricator General called ally, killing those who did not. One of the first afflicted worlds was Venus, where the scrap code smashed into the systems of that planet's climate control stations. The skyborne platforms became battlegrounds as tech priests fought against rebellious systems and their former traitorous colleagues both. One by one, the stations fell from the sky, but not before frantic distress calls could be transmitted. This was repeated throughout the solar volume, from the mining outposts of Mercury to automated defense platforms in the Kuiper Belt. A civil war in miniature, and one right under the ever-watchful eyes of Terra. Upon the throne world, the Praetorian, 7th Legion Primarch Rogel Dorn, had immediately ordered the destruction of all data links to Mars once it became clear that some sort of unspeakable calamity was unfolding. Imperial Fist Astartes ruthlessly obliterated Martian data hub facilities, slaughtering their tech priest attendants within, regardless of loyalty, lest the scrap code infect Imperial systems. Dorn's pragmatism, callous as ever, would allow for no other course. The Primarch knew well the flags of rebellion that had been raised by his brother Horus on distant Istvan, and despite the long-awaited word of the Retribution fleet he himself had dispatched, the Praetorian could only assume the treachery had spread now to Mars. Yet it was just because of the Imperial commitment to this fleet that Dorn's hands were tied when it came to the decision of whether or not to aid the Loyalists of Mars. The sheer number of Astartes assigned to bring the renegade Warmaster to justice, not to mention their attached Auxilia divisions, had bled Saul of troops. Dorne had little in the way of intelligence as to what was unfolding on the Red Planet, but was fundamentally aware of the capabilities of the Mechanicum, those known, and those he was well aware he could not comprehend. Mars was the seat of the Machine God, Terra's equal, its empire in partnership with that of the Imperium's. The Emperor himself had avoided conquering it those centuries beforehand because of its military and technological might. There existed no projections in the minds of Imperial strategos for conquest of the Red Planet. Even if there had been such contingencies, Dorne fundamentally lacked the manpower to accomplish it. Ultimately, what could be spared, without risking the security of Terra itself, was four companies of Dorne's own Imperial Fists, the only Astartes the Primarch could trust in light of Horus's rebellion. To lead this strike force, Dorne appointed two of his most trusted commanders, First Captain Sigismund and Captain Camba Diaz. A captain of few words even amongst a legion renowned for directness, Camba Diaz was the steel intended to restrain the collar of the former. Sigismund had a bellicose nature that was infamous throughout the Imperium, and would need tempering should his ire be brought to bear against the right foe. Each would be given command of two companies. Support for the Astartes was provided by 13 sub-cohorts of the Saturnine Rams Solar Auxilia, drawn from that regiment's 1st and 9th cohorts, as well as four sub-cohorts of the Jovian Grenadiers Solar Auxilia. Finally, an ad hoc formation of 32 members of the Legio Custodes, the bodyguards of the Emperor himself and finest warriors of the Imperial Household, was assembled by Malkador the Sigillite, with the intent to supplement the Imperial Fists with sheer combat prowess, but also to observe and document precisely what was occurring on Mars, with the full authority of the Sigillite and the Imperial Household. The mission statement was simple. Secure a site on Mars at the most valuable production sites for Imperial control. If possible, regain control over the majority of the planet. This latter aspect was essentially a secondary consideration, especially given what precisely rested within those key production facilities being targeted. In the Forge Fanes of Mondus Oculum was known to be held a full production run of the new Mark VI Corvus pattern power armor, originally intended to have been supplied to frontline Astartes legions across the galaxy. This stockpile was now an incredibly valuable asset, one Dorne could scarce risk from falling into traitor hands. Even more valuable, however, and a secret known only to the Sigillite, the Praetorian, and now his two field commanders, was the project template for the prototype Mark VII, the Aquila pattern power armor, stored within the most deep cogitator archives of Fabricator Locum Zagreus Kane. Such was the advancement of the Mark VII that Dorne was fully willing to risk the lives of his warriors, and perhaps even the operational security of the Sol system. Several chroniclers have speculated that, deep in the Praetorian's cold soul, he feared that the Retribution fleet would fail, and Horus would escape the Emperor's justice. Others have posited that the Primarch was simply covering all available options, and that his commitment to the recovery of the Mark VII pattern was only enough to warrant four companies. The task force was dispatched with all possible haste, and found nothing to bar its path. No ships challenged the approach of the Imperial Fist vessel. What few Martian ships even remained active were limping for safe harbor elsewhere within Saul's light, fleeing the destruction that was, even now, playing out across the Red Planet and its ring of iron. Mars's most famous megastructure, this orbital shipyard haloed the home of the Mechanicum and was now lying in ruins. Whole sections exposed to the hard void, while in others Phosphex flames still burned in defiance of the lack of air. Mars herself was clearly little better. Sensorium passes from Imperial ships had spoken of vast destruction meted out across its surface, but this was now clearly visible from orbit. Blasted ruins marked the red plains, wordless testament to a ferocious struggle being waged even as Imperial commanders scryed incoming Auspex sweeps. The death of innocents had gifted Mars a myriad of new scars. The Cassini crater, where once stood the great engine yards of High Magos Ahotep, was now a sea of nuclear fire. The forge fanes of Asemius Lycus were contaminated with what appeared to be a localized, twisted strain of the Life Eater virus. The Tycho Brahe ammunition storage facility, where once whole legions of Astartes had seen themselves diligently resupplied, was now nothing but a smoking crater. More and more sensor sweeps yielded a worsening picture. Entire Titan legions walked, god machines clashing in apocalyptic fury. Millions of Mechanicum soldiery across a multitude of tagmata were already engaged in open warfare. Against such hosts, against such machines, the Imperial Strike Force amounted to hilariously paltry scraps. Sigismund and Diaz knew that there would be no hope of planetary conquest. Mars was a battleground unlike anything Sol had ever seen. Its recapture had ended before it had even begun. In private counsel with Camba Diaz and S.H.I.E.L.D. Captain Arcas of the Legio Custodes, the belligerent Sigismund raged at the perfidy he saw, even now, playing out on the surface of Mars. The treachery of Horus Lupercal come here, to the very heart of humanity, ruining her sister world in fire and fury. In kind, he raged at the weakness of the Mechanicum for being apparently unable to resist, and likewise at the idea that the Imperial Strike Force should withdraw, given the odds they faced. S.H.I.E.L.D. Captain Arcas was Custodes. The Emperor's life wards had always held a dim opinion of Astartes' bellicosity, an opinion Sigismund's behavior was doing nothing to disavow. As far as the S.H.I.E.L.D. Captain was concerned, Mars had fallen. The Strike Force would inflict little to no impact upon the course of the battles playing out below them. Camba Diaz, however, was used to his brother's fury and knew how to direct it. He proposed a plan by which the Imperials could achieve Dorne's primary orders and still satisfy the honor of Sigismund, who felt them all in dereliction of it. The first captain relented, and Arcas ultimately agreed. Planetfall was ordered with immediate effect, the first dropships launching within mere hours. The first wave was one of Imperial Fist Yellow. Stormbirds of the Legion plunged towards Mondas Oculum, the forge of Zagreus Kane, disgorging Terminators in combat formation. Sigismund, at their vanguard, had no idea of Kane's loyalties at present, having been unable, and indeed unwilling, to raise the Fabricator Locum on comms networks. Yet, he deployed with banners raised, declaring his own fealty and his own intentions as clearly as possible. Having been dispatched to Mondas Gamma, the forge fane of Lucas Chrome, Camba Diaz was made acutely aware that one of the Fabricator General's closest allies had indeed not been swayed by any especial loyalty to Terra. As Diaz's force approached, a torrent of energy beams bombarded the Imperial Fist gunships, forcing Camba Diaz to order a diversion to the high plains of the Solus Planum. The landings mounted by the Solar Auxilia at the forges of Epluvian Maximals fared even worse. The Magos' fane of Ulysses Patera was under siege by the forces of the new Dark Mechanicum, meaning the Saturnine Rams were deploying into an active combat theater where they had no idea who was friend and who was foe. A murderous and pointlessly bloody battle erupted at the foot of the Forge Fane's defenses, with the Solar Auxilia compelled to defend themselves on all fronts for over an hour before it was established that Archmagos Maximal and his Tagmata were yet loyal to the Imperium. As this was playing out, in orbit, Shield Captain Arcas watched all with interest, their mind ever considering the idea that these Astartes may not be made for this. Elsewhere, Camba Diaz's battle force re-engaged the enemies of the Imperium. The captain had no intent of simply throwing his Astartes into the teeth of Lucas Chrome's guns. A more cautious approach was needed. Key points in the defense of Mondus Gamma were identified and struck, inflicting negligible damage on the structures, but reaping a fearsome toll in the lives of tech thralls and Scutarii. The deluge of bolter shells allowed for forward emplacement of Imperial Fist heavy weapons teams, who set about demolishing the gun emplacements around the Forge's eastern district. The opening created a landing zone for Astartes drop pods. Summoned from orbit, a full company of Imperial Fists, held in reserve, assaulted the Forge with cold fury. First claimed was the outer wall gatehouse, armored doors blasted apart by meltabombs, allowing Camba Diaz to lead the Astartes of the initial landing into the heart of the ongoing battle, in the name of his Lord Dorn. Following this, a string of macro warehouses on the inward reaches of the district fell to the Imperials, descending into a fierce firefight between them and traitor automata. The armored containers within held a plethora of war gear intended for the Legion of Horus himself, which the Loyalists were eager and quick to turn to their own use. Indeed, the destruction of nearby automata command relays was made possible by a whole squadron of commandeered Vindicator siege tanks in the sea green of the 16th Legion Sons of Horus, now crewed by Imperial Fists. These first hours of combat were a stunning success for Camba Diaz, and a testament to his leadership. The Dark Mechanicum defenders were falling back, slain or rendered inoperable, and a bounty of arms, munitions, and armored vehicles had been captured. Capitalizing upon the relative quiet, Diaz ordered the Jovian Solar Auxilia to begin their landings in force. As the taciturn Camba Diaz fought tooth and nail for his purchases within Mondus Gamma, the warlord Sigismund had been admitted to Mondus Oculum with no grand battle, merely hurried relief. Fabricator Locum Zagreus Kane, master of the Forge and nominally the secondary authority on Mars after Kelbor Hal, was staunch in his loyalty to the Emperor. Mondus Oculum had been spared the ravages of the Scrap Code thanks to its implementation of the new spheric technology pioneered by the neighboring High Adept Macrotech Coriel Zeth of the Magma City. It had likewise been spared of any overt military action, but this began to change after the arrival of the Imperial Fists. The Forge's famed Myrmidon Covens, positioned in its defense, began to register probing attacks by unmarked automata and tech thrall clades. Each was initially easily repulsed, but steadily their intensity increased. As Kane and Sigismund took counsel in the Fabricator Locum's chambers, both received reports of a string of explosions amongst the outlying refinery districts. Likely secretly thrilled to break from conversation and blood himself upon the enemy, Sigismund personally led 100 Astartes to secure the city's outskirts, expecting to find paltry resistance given the reports he had inloaded from other areas of the Forge. What the Imperial Fists encountered stunned them to their core. Instead of coming under fire from tech thrall Lazlocks, the Astartes were forced to dive to cover as a hail of Nemesis bolter fire came upon them. Trading return shots, the Loyalists beheld something truly unexpected. The shifting blue-green hues of the power armor worn by the 20th Legion, Alpha Legion. The shock of this was profound. When the Imperium had last had word, the Alpha Legion had joined en masse into Dorne's Retribution Fleet, sends your task force that even now was supposed to be bringing the Emperor's justice to Horus on Istvan. These Astartes should be brothers in arms, yet this was evidently not the case. Wholly unmanned by this revelation of treachery, Sigismund and his warriors staggered, pinned by enfilading fire from carefully chosen Alpha Legion positions. Several of their number had already been lost in the ambush, and it was these deaths that roused the choler of Sigismund to new heights. He charged forwards, his own bodyguards attempting to maintain pace with their furious captain. The Alpha Legion, having successfully, and honestly quite easily, baited Sigismund into the open, prepared to reap the full total of their advantage. The first captain's life may truly have ended then and there, on Mars's red soil, were it not for the timely arrival and intervention of a cohort of Zagreus Kane's Thalaxi, cyborg warriors near the match for Astartes in capabilities and staying power. Utilizing their jet bikes to weave amongst their native forge and fire probing blasts from their lightning guns, the Thalax cohort proved to the Alpha Legion that their advantage had been lost, and between the cyborgs and the charging 7th Legion, the Astartes of Alpharius chose discretion and fell back. All Sigismund discovered when his advance reached their positions were spent bolter casings. The forge had ostensibly been resecured, yet insecure now was the mind of Sigismund. Unable to send word to Terra, the first captain had no way of warning his Lord Dorne of the treachery of the Alpha Legion, and even had he been able to, it is supremely doubtful that Dorne could have raised the Retribution fleet in turn. Such helplessness sat extremely ill with Sigismund. As ever, the only balm was duty. He bore the news to Fabricator Locum Kane, advising the forge be brought immediately to a war footing. Summoning his Tagmata in full, Kane placed the full military might of Mondus Oculum at Sigismund's disposal, knowing well that he was no war leader, but also that if the nature of the Alpha Legion had been revealed, that yet more Primarchs had sided with Horus, that the secrets of his forge would be even more precious to the Loyalist war effort. Within his foothold in Mondus Gamma, Cambadiaz took stock of his forces. 200 Imperial Fists already lay dead. The weapons of the Mechanicum were fearsome in their lethality, easily a match for the Ceramite or flesh of an Astartes. Diaz, in need altogether dire, committed his reserves. 40,000 Jovian Grenadiers, Imperial troops of the Solar Auxilia pattern. The soldiery were deployed some 80 kilometers outside the walls of Mondus Gamma, Diaz being unwilling to risk the lumbering bulk landers of the Auxilia against the still very active air defenses of the Forge. His own Astartes would have to hold their ground until the reinforcements could arrive, but Cambadiaz did not intend on his defense being static. The captain gathered seeker squads to him and selected targets not for military value, but ones intended to confuse and misdirect. He reasoned that the Mechanicum forces arrayed against him would have calculated the tactical value of every asset currently in play and arrayed their defenses accordingly. Thus, anything that would go against this algorithm would cast them into disarray. Over a dozen hit-and-run attacks were launched, to varying degrees of success. At Transit Junction 993G, the Astartes used meltabombs to functionally cripple a major arterial, denying the Tagmata of Lucas Chrome the ability to deploy heavy armor. But elsewhere, 24 Imperial Fists were killed in the middle of sabotaging an auxiliary power exchange. Overwhelmed by the tide of modified combat servitors, the ranking officer ordered the detonation of his melta charges, immolating his squads and the power exchange before they were overrun entirely. Despite the toll, deaths such as these were not for naught. Cambadiaz's strategy had thrown the defenders of the Forge into chaos. Despite the disparity in numbers, the unwieldy automata and tech thrall clades of Lucas Chrome could never adapt quickly enough to bring their numerical superiority to bear. The Imperial Fists were outmaneuvering them at every turn. The greater part of Cambadias's force still held the Eastern District, seeing only sporadic combat and easily holding the munitions depots the battle force had originally seized. At Mondas Oculum, the aimless skirmishes with traitor forces was wearing on the patience of Zagreus Kane's bellicose tagmata. Easily repulsed, each assault, doomed to failure, was more confusing than anything else. No missives, neither outright threat nor demand for surrender, had been received from the Fabricator General, Lucas Chrome, Ertzi Malevolus, or Regulus. That these heavy traitor players were not seemingly getting involved, that the least of the traitor's forces were engaging Kane's forge, spoke of ill tidings. Historical retrospect, however, thanks to the studies of surviving records and examinations of timestamps, point towards a concentration of traitor forces upon the assault of the Magma City of High Adept Coriel Zeth as being the most likely explanation. Yet, due to a communications blackout that affected even her newsphere, Kane and Sigismund had little idea of what was transpiring beyond even their most short-range Auspex grids. Destruction was almost certainly to come, and so the forges of Mondas Oculum did not cease their production during this period. If anything, production was ramped up ahead of a possible traitor assault. The relentless waves of weapons and war machines intended for use by the Legionnaires Astartes poured forth from the Manufactoria. For 18 straight hours, the roar of the forge's production eclipsed any sounds of combat. Yet within, Sigismund was growing impatient. The Templar knew his obligation was to defend the forge and what it was producing, yet within him burned a fierce desire to bring ruin to the traitor hosts. Finally, the Imperial Fist was granted its excuse. Spherically transmitted picked captures displayed the unmistakable blue-green of Alpha Legion power armor amidst an oncoming host of tech thralls. Content to leave Kane to his production quotas and logistical management, Sigismund rallied his Astartes and made for war. What the 7th Legion encountered on the western edge of Mondas Oculum was nothing short of a tidal incursion of Tech Thrall and Vorax automata. Kane's Castellax maniples had already been overwhelmed. It stood now for the phalanx of yellow-armored Terminators to hold the line. The chaff of Mars was easily slain, yet for each downed Thrall, two emerged from the howling sandstorms. Sigismund found here no honorable battle, merely numbing destruction. The mindless slaves of the enemy were a monotony to slaughter, yet seemingly they were without number. The Alpha Legion knew this and had exploited it. They pinned Sigismund in place, not with an actual mortal threat, but with the Templar's own sense of duty. As the 7th Legion held the mass assault at bay, their cousins slipped into the forge proper. As their passage was effected and Myrmidon reinforcements arrived, a sudden explosion tore apart an entire squad of Huskarls in a single shot. Emerging from the visual haze of the storm and the sensorium denying scrap code interference, stalked the immense figures of Titans. The Legio Mortis had come to Mondas Oculum. Still kilometers distant, their city-killing weaponry could yet be brought to bear upon the defenders. Sigismund ordered an immediate retreat. There was not a weapon in his arsenal that could stand against this foe. Would that the fates were kinder to Cambadias, yet it were not so. Lucas Chrome had revealed now the full extent of his malevolent workings, those that had kept him from the battlefield. The Archmagos unleashed a mass of wretched horrors upon his own forge, metallic giants in crude likenesses of Castellax, Vorax, and Ursurax battle automata, yet seemingly powered now by a uniquely vicious intelligence. wholly unlike the slow and ponderous automata that the Imperial Fists had been easily evading, these new creations clearly were unshackled from the limited diktats of engrammatic protocols and war algorithms. Yet worse, these new intelligences appeared fully capable of learning beyond the boundaries of their original programming. Captain Diaz was lured into an ambush by corrupted Vox signals swirling around Imperial Fist channels, automata using the corpses of fallen Astartes as sinister bait to draw out the 7th Legion vanguard. The engagement cost the captain half of his men. A breakout was only effected at the expense of the last of the vanguard's demolition charges. Commandeered armor meant for the Sons of Horus laid down barrages of fire against the oncoming assault, a hard-fought stopgap that was only turned into true success by the timely arrival of the Jovian Grenadiers, the armored bulks of their Dracosan transports forming an ad hoc bulwark for the Astartes and Solar Auxilia both. A dire stalemate developed. The Loyalist death toll mounted, and of the engines of Lucas Chrome, there appeared to be no end. The Master of Machines had clearly been hard at work since the beginning of the Death of Innocence, and likely beforehand. He appeared to care little for quality control in his rush to develop these new deathly automata. It was now plain that his intention had ever been to use the battle as a grand experiment, a mass combat trial for these early wicked prototypes against the warriors of the Legionnaires Astartes. Cambadias, in the name of his Lord Dorn, fought valiantly. But the tactical situation was clear. Retreat was the only choice. Mondus Gamma was beyond the grasp of the Imperium. It appeared that Mondus Oculum would soon follow suit. As Cambadias was forced into retreat by the automata of Lucas Chrome, so too was Sigismund nigh routed by the titans of the Legio Mortis. Against god engines, neither the Imperial Fists nor the Tagmata Cane had any hope. Their heaviest weapons were mere irritants against the void-shielded titans. The battle was now a slaughter, one the Princeps of Mortis, glutting their egos upon the force differential, were drawing out for their own dark amusement. Within this cruelty, ironically, lay hope for the Loyalists. As the Death's Heads advanced slowly, gleefully undoing the outer reaches of the forged vein block by block, Kane's workforce had shifted to the loading of brand new suits of power armor into waiting bulk haulers. A grim equation developed. Each firing of a Legio Mortis weapon pronounced the doom of Imperial Fists and Loyalist Tagmata, yet each shuttle that leapt skywards was more materiel bound for the armies of Terra. Desperate Astartes ambushes on Mortis Knight Household Outriders crippled some suits, while Thanatar Siege Automata pummeled the hunting dogs of the Death's Heads in kind. These heroics are noteworthy, but ultimately doomed in their impotence before the god machines themselves. Sigismund yet fought. His commitment to his duty would brook nothing less. The Templar had managed to effect the evacuation of the Fabricator Locum, although he had almost come to blows with Kane, who despaired at the need to abandon his forge and his life's work. Without the Archmagos' guiding intelligence, the programming of his Tagmata's automata lapsed to their most basic levels, becoming now little more than dull iron blockades for the traitors to scythe through. The Imperial Fists had one final duty to perform before their retreat. The wholesale destruction of Mondas Oculum's primary data fane, lest the plans for the Mark VII power armor fall into the grasp of the traitors. Perhaps unsurprisingly, there they once again encountered the Alpha Legion infiltrators, the 20th having used the battle to strike at the Myrmidon Guardian Coven in charge of defending the priceless data. For the first time in the dire span of the Horus Heresy, Sigismund of the Imperial Fists took the lives of his fellow Astartes, glutting his rage upon his cousins, but it was bitter recompense. Pinning the Alpha Legion's commander to the wall with his sword, Sigismund was told, to the legionaries' dying laughter, that he was too late. The sons of Alfarius had all the data they needed. With a flick of his wrist, Sigismund cut free the head of the traitor, letting it fall into the ashes of the forge as a personal statement of intent. Within this defeat, still yet lay his resolve. His war would continue. At Mondus Gamma, Camadias faced a dilemma all of his own. A veritable trove of arms and armaments lay within his possession, yet to use his Astartes to exfiltrate it to the dropships awaiting would lead to the wholesale slaughter of the Solar Auxilia. Yet, at the same time, even the combined might of Astartes and Auxilia both could do nothing else but delay the victory of Lucas Chrome's malevolent automata. The choice, ultimately, came down to the grim arithmetic of Imperial warfare. And Astartes, properly equipped, could accomplish far more than even the best-trained Auxilia soldier. The Jovian Grenadiers were ordered to hold the line as the Imperial fists rushed rearwards to complete the evacuation. The 7th Legion loaded the bounty of the Forge onto their ships, their activity accompanied by the screams of dying Auxilia and the desperate pleas for aid over the Vox. It was, in many ways, so much worse than the spite and cruelty of the enemy. To the Praetorians of Terra, it was the sound of duty in dereliction. With a curious twist of fate, the remaining lives of the Solar Auxilia were spared not by the hands of the supposedly nearly human Astartes, but the decidedly post-human Legio Custodes. The company, under Solar Arcas, effected a teleport assault into the heart of the battle, sparing the Servivian Jovians in a hurried retreat to their dropships. Shield Captain Arcas led their company commendably. As Captain Diaz's ships tore skyward, a blinding flash announced the withdrawal of the Custodians by teleport, with not a single golden-armored body remaining behind. The focus of any chronicler's work on this, the Imperial Fist's initial expedition to Mars, has tended to focus on the conflicts at Mondus Gamma and Mondus Oculum. Few indeed are the scholars that have bothered to dedicate time to the study of what happened at the Forge Fanes owned by Epluvian Maximal, which one counts as an odd thing to disregard. Understandable, perhaps, given the sheer abject futility of this particular combat zone, yet in its themes it is quite emblematic of the wider war for Mars. Futile carnage that had almost no strategic effect on the ongoing clashes between Loyalist and Traitor across the galaxy. While the Imperial Fists at Mondus Gamma and Mondus Oculum fought largely limited engagements until the final traitor assaults, the Saturnine Rams of the Solar Auxilia bore the full brunt of the Fabricator General's collar. Such was the size of the Tagmata that Kelbor Hal had arrayed against them, pouring from Olympus Mons, that the plains of Mars apparently were no longer red, but a sea of dark iron. Heavy scrap code interference denied the Solar Auxilia any ability to raise their status as loyalists to the forces of the Tagmata Maximal rapidly enough. While they avoided open battle with the Archmagos' forces, the Rams were consequently caught outside the walls of the Fane when the armies of Kelbor Hal arrayed themselves for besiegement. The last confirmed communication from the Imperial forces fighting alongside Epluvian Maximal arrived as Sigismund beheld the Legio Mortis approaching Mondas Oculum. The badly degraded Voxblurt from Solar Auxilia Legate Marshal De Valis informed his commander that ammunition was all but exhausted, that all of his tercios had sustained heavy losses, and that their position was untenable without Astartes' support. Attempts at reconnection utterly failed, although even if they had, reinforcements simply were not coming. As his forge fell under the Fabricator General's assault, Epluvian Maximal removed the safety and containment protocols from his fusion reactors in a final act of suicidal spite. The resulting explosion briefly birthed a localized star on the plains of Mars, and sent seismic disturbances rippling planet-wide. Of the warriors of the Saturnine Rams, they were ultimately declared martyrs, and honored for their sacrifice. But their true fate would not be known until the final years of the Age of Darkness. The Loyalist retreat to the safety of Martian orbit allowed for a tally to be made of the expedition's successes. Within the strictest definition, their victory had been achieved. They had claimed for Terra's legions freshly produced Mark VI power armor, and had secured the plans for the Mark VII alongside its architect, Zagreus Kane. As Fabricator Locum, the continued survival of so senior a mechanical adept was an additional political boon, granting legitimacy to those of the priesthood that yet held firm to the Imperium and the cause of the Emperor. They had, additionally, claimed a not insignificant amount of war materiel that had been bound for Horus's legions, denied now to the War Master, and possibly enough to assuage the worries of Rogel Dorn regarding the immediate fate of Terra against possible traitor assault, at least in the short term. It had, of course, cost them a grievous tally in lives. But had such duty been given to warriors of poorer metal, it would likely have led to a wholesale defeat. Victory had been distilled from the loss of Mars, but yet the conflict left a grim resignation in the minds who fought in it, and heard tell of it. The death of innocents had been but the beginning. The war for Mars, the war for the galaxy, would be no swift thing. Contained now, blockaded, upon Terra's very precipice, was a planet firmly in the grip of the traitors. A cancer at the heart of humanity's home system. What had begun with the scream would drag into terrible, dark silence for many years to come. Until such a time as one may further explore the horrors of the Age of Darkness. Ave Imperator. Gloria. In Excelsis Terra. This video and this channel were made possible thanks to the very kind donations and support from my Patreon subscribers. If you'd like to help support the channel, head on over to patreon.com/Oculus Imperia. If you'd like to receive more updates about the channel and any future videos, you can contact me or follow me on Twitter @OculusImperia. Otherwise, please like, subscribe, comment, let me know your feedback, and as ever, thank you very much for watching.